I think we've got it going now. Well, good evening. Thank you all for joining the Shiur tonight.
This might be working.
I think some people may have got lost on the way to the bat mitzvah downstairs, but we'll go with this hearty crew here. And I want to begin by just sharing a little summer adventure with you. I mean, the title of tonight's Shiur is Mikra Bikurim, From History to Memory, and I want to really begin by reflecting a little bit on history as it is taught, as it is understood as a discipline amongst disciplines in America in the 21st century. And I want to begin that reflection with, I shared with you a moment or two ago, with a summer adventure that I took with my wife and my 11-year-old daughter. About 2 weeks ago, we took a three-day trip to Washington, D.C., and I had this, I don't know if it was a fantasy or wish fulfillment or something in my head, that my 11-year-old daughter, who is a big fan of Hamilton, of the musical Hamilton, she's never seen that musical, of course, but she's listened to the soundtrack dozens and dozens of times. She knows the lyrics by heart, she knows the tunes, and I think she's even absorbed some of the history that's contained in the musical. So I got it into my head that she would really enjoy going down to D.C. and seeing some of the sights. We left on a Sunday. We started with Mount Vernon. Mount Vernon plays a prominent role in one of the songs in Hamilton. Of course, you know, it's the ancestral home of George Washington, his burial place. And, you know, I have to say that my daughter was pretty interested. When we got down to Mount Vernon, she certainly took in all the sights and the different exhibits that were in the museum that was on the grounds. It's actually beautiful. I don't know if any of you have been to Mount Vernon recently, but they have a gorgeous educational center and museum. My daughter was fascinated by the little ceremony that took place outside of Martha and George Washington's tomb. You could actually see their sarcophagi. And at, I believe, at 10 a.m. and at 3 p.m. every day, there's a little ceremony where they get audience members to recite something from Washington, his farewell address, or something that's associated with Washington. And she was really interested in that. She was interested that there's a slave memorial. As you know, Washington held many slaves, but he also freed his slaves. Unlike any of the other founders, at least that I'm aware of, he actually freed his slaves upon his death. So that was a pretty good first day, and I was kind of heartened by her response. And you know, the rest of the trip went really nicely. There's only one major glitch. She really desperately wanted to go on a go-kart, on a scooter rather, not a go-kart. They have these scooters, these motorized scooters now, and was right outside of the Lincoln Memorial, and I was like, "Oh, come on! Don't you want to see Lincoln and read, you know, his second inaugural, which is a great piece of American political rhetoric, biblical allusions, lots of biblical allusions, God, of course, but more than God, the almost chosen nation, America," and I was really struck not just by my daughter's seeming interest in at least most of this, but by how many people were visiting the monuments. I mean, the Jefferson Monument was full when we went. The Lincoln Monument was packed. Washington Monument was under some construction, so there weren't too many crowds. But it was striking, and it wasn't only it wasn't only culturally American individuals. It was Americans of every stripe and every sort, you know, Hispanic Americans, African Americans. There was a real interest in these historical monuments. And, you know in the news there's been a lot lately about monuments and what to do with the legacy of the Confederacy. And there was a general, if not veneration, there was a general respect that I certainly saw in all these monuments at all these historical places. And yet, there is something about history and what many have documented as the illiteracy when it comes to American history that our young people, especially our young people, our millennials, our young people today are really facing. About 5 or 6 years ago, there was a Wall Street Journal weekend interview with David McCullough. David McCullough, as many of you know, is a historian, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, really the elder statesman in American history living today. And they did this interview with him, and just it's striking, what he was saying. And this is not like a crusty old man who's just being in a curmudgeonly mood and complaining. But I mean, he said, we're raising young people who, by and large, are historically illiterate. And that's not mere rhetoric on his part. It's documented. You could actually see what American children today know about history. And it's very striking. It's frightening in many ways. In 2010, the Department of Education released something they call the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It's kind of like the nation's report card. And they found that only 12% of American high school seniors had a firm grasp of American history. 12%. Less than 40% of American high school seniors were able to identify the years of the American Civil War within a 50-year range. Less than 40% could identify when the American Civil War took place within 50 years. 2% were able to convey the significance of Brown versus Board of Education. This is a very frightening...
What about Monica Lewinsky?
Well, if you're asking Dr. Becker what the blurring of the lines between popular culture and real history are, I think you're onto something. But this tale here, Bernie, we've got extra. This tale of historical illiteracy is something that has been brewing for quite some time. It's not something that just all of a sudden descended on us as a nation. McCullough, in this interview, mentioned that he first was clued into this malady, this historical illiteracy, in a conversation that took place 20 years earlier, so almost 30 years ago, when he was giving a lecture in a pretty prominent, well-regarded Midwestern university, and a young woman came up to him after his lecture, and she said, "Mr. McCullough, until your lecture this morning, I hadn't realized that all 13 of the original colonies and states were all on the East Coast." Now, that is such a damning confession, because what it shows is not only is there no understanding of geography or history, but the whole history of Western Europe and the exploration age and the discovery of America. It's like a 500-year, half a millennium period, but there's this illiteracy, there's this absence of real historical knowledge. And I want to just end this preface here with McCullough's concluding comments in this interview. He says that we have to talk about history. We have to talk about the books we love, the biographies and the histories. We should all take our children to historical places. Go to Gettysburg. Go to the Capitol. Well, this made me feel very good. After I took, having just gone on this historical tour. But I think McCullough is obviously onto something here. And the question is, as an American civilization, we seem to be failing miserably in cultivating a sense of the historical, a sense of what came before, a sense of the roots of our civilization. The question is this: what does Yahadus do? What does Judaism do as a culture and as a civilization, as well as a religion, to preserve and to cultivate a sense of history? And I think what I want to demonstrate tonight in our investigation of the mitzvah of Bikurim is that we move past history. That history, yes, history is something that we actually do cultivate, and we do have a sense of history, perhaps far more than peoples and nations and civilizations that don't have the tools as a people to cultivate memory. And the move from history to memory is something that was famously charted by the great historian Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, who is the disciple, the student of Salo Baron, who was considered the 20th century's greatest Jewish historian, professor at Columbia. Yerushalmi wrote his everybody associates this book with Yerushalmi. It's not a big book, it's actually rather thin, slim volume, but it's called Zachor, Jewish History and Jewish Remembrance. And I want to look at the mitzvah of Bikurim in light of Yerushalmi's insight about the move, the transition from history to memory. So let's take a look at the source sheet. And source Aleph is simply the Parsha of Mitzvot Bikurim. And I want to just highlight and underscore now an interesting grammatical turn. So, V'haya ki tzavo el ha'aretz asher Hashem elokecha nosein lecha nachla v'yirishta v'yashavta ba, that after the long journey of 40 years through the wilderness, the Jews will arrive in the Promised Land, but after 14 years of Yerusha v'yeshiva, the settlement, the conquest and the settlement of the land, bilakachta mereishis kol pri ha'adama, you will take from the first fruits of the land, and Chazal define this as the Shivat Minim. This is not the first fruits of every species that you'll find in the land of Israel, but specifically the seven species that are indigenous to the land of Israel, that are specially associated with the land of Israel. Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lach, V'samta Batena, you'll put it in the basket, V'alachta El HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokecha L'Ashakin Shemo Shem, and you will go, you will make a pilgrimage to the place that God will choose for you, where He dwell, where His presence and His name dwells. Uvasa El HaKohen Asher Yeh B'Yamim HaHem, and you will go to the priest that will be in those days. Why do you think the Torah underscores or mentions Asher Yeh B'Yamim HaHem, that will be in those days? What does that seem to suggest or seem to imply in terms of history or in terms of a timeline or chronology? What did you say, Shari? Okay, it's current in that you will go to the current Kohen, but does it seem to be something in the present? Okay, you can't go to the one in the past, obviously. You are going to the one in the present, but it's projecting forward to a time that the Kohen that will be in those days. In other words, this is a commandment not for a single time. It's not like, well, that first year after the 14 years of Yerusha Yeshiva, then you'll do the mitzvahs of Bikurim, and that's it. This is a mitzvah that is continuously going to be done, and it's going to be repeated again and again in the cycle of Jewish history. And you will see many Kohanim. You will see many priests. But the priest that will be in your day obviously is going to officiate in this ceremony. The Amarte love, and you will say to him, Higadati Hayom LaHashem Elokecha, that I've come to, you know, this day to the Lord my God. Kivasi el ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem avoseinu l'aseis lanu. What's striking about this formulation? Kivasi el ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem avoseinu l'aseis lanu. What is it technically? Let's translate it. Word. What does it mean? Kivasi el ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem avoseinu l'aseis lanu. The person, the farmer, is speaking. Kibasi. Is this a first person? What grammatical form is this? Kibasi. For I have come to the land that was sworn to my ancestors that would be given to us. Is this, strictly speaking, accurate? Is this true? Is it true? I came, did he come? Maybe the first generation, maybe the first year, because maybe he came into the land. But remember, we're projecting this forward. This is one of the mitzvahs of Tluyot Ba'aretz. These are one of the mitzvahs that are contingent upon settling the land, and they are continuous while you're dwelling in the land. So conceivably, this formulation that the person is making is not necessarily accurate in the sense that I came to the land. Maybe the first generation came to land, but not the 30th generation. We've been in the land. I think that's important. I think that's very important for the point that we're trying to develop here, that we are moving past mere history to the point of memory, which is a construction. It's almost an artifice that you put yourself into the storyline. You put yourself into the narrative. Another one of the words that came up a lot in Hamilton, that you're putting yourself into the narrative. You're making yourself in this story in a way that isn't historically true. You didn't come to the land. Your ancestors came to the land. You're just the beneficiary of that pioneer spirit. You're not the pioneer. But yes, you actually speak that way. You talk that way. Because you're living this. You're recreating this. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but it's good. This is the point. Yes, Sharon?
It's actually a very key phrase, because Hashem Shiva Hashem Lava Sein is exactly it's like a dual thing. And for God to remember us, it's worth us.
Right. It's absolutely, it's reciprocal. This sense of memory, look, we're coming to the holiday of memory. Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Zikaron. And it's a reciprocated memory. We remember that God brought us here. God remembers his oath to the forefathers. And that is a relationship that is not simply historical. It's not something that we recollect an event in the distant past. Like an American tourist looking at, you know, Jefferson's memorial or Lincoln's memorial or Washington's memorial. But rather, we see ourselves in the story, that we are these people that came out of the land of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan. Let's continue. And the Kohen will take the basket and the bundle from the hand of the farmer, and he place it on the altar. The anisa, the amarta lifnei Hashem Elokecha, and here is the centerpiece. Here is the centerpiece of the mitzvah bikurim is mikra bikurim, the formulation, the recitation that is said upon giving of the first fruits. It's mikra bikurim. What is mikra bikurim? And you're all going to be familiar with this because this is the centerpiece of the Haggadah. The centerpiece of the Pesach Seder, which again is a kind of primary, prototypical passage of memory and not just history. It's seeing oneself in the story, seeing oneself in the narrative. So we get a encapsulated history, a brief history of what happened to our ancestors. And that we were persecuted, and that we cried out to God, we proclaimed to God our fealty, our loyalty. And God brought us out from Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with wonders, with great wonders and signs. And he brought us Elamakom Hazeh. He brought us to this place, to this new land, to the promised land, our old land, our ancestral land. And then he gave us this beautiful land flowing with milk and honey. The Ata, and now, I have brought, look at the parallelism, V'yivi'enu Elamakom, here's that reciprocity that Sharon was talking about, that God brought us to the land, and now we bring the first fruits of the land, Esreishis Pri Adama Asher Nasat Ali Hashem, that God gave us, specifically we emphasize that God gave us this, and that's going to be through the Moni HaMitzvos and the Rishonim who study the mitzvah of Bikur, that is going to be the leitmotif, that's going to be the key theme, this sense of indebtedness to God, that this is not self-made success, and that we bow down, we prostrate ourselves before Hashem. The Samachta b'chol atov asher nosan l'cha, Hashem elokecha. Again, asher nosan l'cha, Hashem elokecha. That we're joyful in all the good and all the bounty that God gave to us. God gave to us. We did not do it ourselves. L'veisef and to our home. Atav v'halevi v'ager asher b'kirbecha. Okay. Let's see what the Rambam says in the Mor Nevuchim. In the Rambam, in the third chelik of the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam famously engages in the exercise of Tamei HaMitzvos, trying to understand the rationale, the reasons for the commandments. And in the 39th chapter of the third section, he discusses Mitzvos HaTluyos Ba'aretz, the agricultural laws that he collects mostly in Sefer Zeruim in his Yad HaChazaka, in his Mishneh Torah. Okay? And then he's trying to give a rationale. But Elo HaMitzvah is a couple of lines down. Kulam kishit tistakel bahem achas achas. That when you look at all these mitzvahs of the class, of the category of mitzvahs, tluyos ba'aretz, all these agricultural laws, you'll find one by one, if you examine them one by one, you'll find that it's obvious what the purpose, the telos, the end of these mitzvahs are, and that is what? Kichemlas ha'aniyim, compassion for the poor, dalim, those that are destitute, lazor ha'avyonim, to support those that are poverty stricken, b'fnim chalukim v'shalo yatzik tzarech, and they shouldn't want, or they shouldn't seek for their needs. Lo yana le'ish chalush b'inyana, and you should not harm or oppress a poor person, a weak person, or someone like a widow or an orphan. That's the general telos, the general purpose of all the mitzvahs that relate to the land in some way or another, deal with justice, with compassion, more compassion than justice, to be precise about it. But then the Rambam continues, and he isolates Mikra Bikurim. About Mikra Bikurim, but the mitzvah of Bikurim and the passage that we read associated with the giving of the Bikurim, Yesh bo midas anava gam kein, that in addition to this altruistic, this sense of compassion for those that are oppressed and those that are weak, the widow, the orphan, there's also a sense of humility that's cultivated in mitzvahs bikurim. Why? Shulokep sal al kseifa, you put a basket on your shoulders, you're hunched down, mardia chaste alokav gumulosav laodia libnei adam, that you proclaim Hashem's kindness, his grace, and his generosity to all of humanity, to all mankind. And that this whole ceremony, according to the Rambam, teaches that man that it is essential in one's avodas Hashem, shebe avodas elokav, hu sheyizkor itos tzarasov v'inyanei mitzukasov, that you should remember the times of your distress and your pain and your suffering. In your days of expansion and your days of comfort, you should remember the days when you were poverty stricken, the days when you were going through rough times, when you were going through the straits. And this is the whole ceremony of Mikra Bikurim, has these elements of thanking God for his great bounty, remembering the suffering of our people, remembering our ancestors. It's all one ceremony that's meant to cultivate not just an awareness of history, oh, we were released from the bondage of Egypt, but it cultivates an emotional awareness, an emotional state. It cultivates certain virtues and certain dispositions in us. This is the move from history to memory that we're going to see inside, but that Yerushalmi really categorizes and elaborates on. Just go a little further down there.
that everybody knows, the Rambam says, that it's a challenge to remember the source of your bounty, the source of the goodness, when you're succeeding, when you're doing well. Because there's a fear, that everybody knows that someone who becomes rich struggles to recognize that God is the source of their success. That the insolence and the arrogance, vazivas hadeos hamikios, and departing from the proper, the truthful and proper virtues and proper dispositions, that we'll see that we'll be successful. These are other psukim from Devarim that the Rambam quotes, that we'll be successful and we'll think that our own kochi va'otzim yadi, also it's a chayim hazos, that we, through our own handiwork, were able to accomplish this. That's the point of Bikurim, to underscore the opposite, the reality, the total reliance on God's bounty, on God's grace. And he goes on a little bit further. We'll just turn the page. And he says the purpose of Bikurim and the Mikra Bikurim, where we talk about the Makos that we were suffering in Egypt, Laman Tiskor Es Yom Tzei Sam Eretz Yisrael, Kol Yimei Chayecha, Laman Pas Tzaper Oznei Bimcha, that you should. This is why there are so many mitzvahs in the Torah, according to the Rambam, that force us or that command us to remember these events, not because we're just focused on the cognitive truth of these occurrences, but no, it's meant to cultivate a sense in our own personalities that we're going to act and think in a different way. Well, by recalling Maimon Har Sinai or really Yetzias Mitzrayim specifically, they have a way of authenticating prophecy and reward and punishment. In Cain, Kol Mitzvah Shemediyah Lizichron Davar Min Haniflos Olam Hasmin Amuna Hayi Farnoda Tolasa. That all these mitzvot that require memory, Shemediyah Lizikaram, whether they're a recollection, a memory of these wonders, events that occur to us, or certain truths, they perpetuate faith, and we understand what their purpose is. So the Rambam begins by talking in general terms about all mitzvahs that tlus ba'aretz, including Bikurim, as to have a altruistic and social purpose to create a society of generosity, a society of kindness that specifically looks for the well-being of the oppressed, of the weak, of the poor. But specifically, Bikurim has the additional dimension of attempting to vanquish the natural arrogance or the haughtiness or the insolence that comes from physical, material success. Let's look at Rav Yitzchak Arama, the Akeis Yitzchak, a little later than the Rambam, about a century or so, a couple of centuries later. The Fish Iker Kabbalah Zelakus Asher Dibarnu Mimenu Asher Bo Yishtarer HaAdam Al Nimtzaot Al Yeser HaUmot Hu Bamashi Yakir HaAdam Shemimenu Baos Kol Tavos Kulam. That gratitude, that the recognition that all of the goodness that you have emanates from God, comes from a higher source, that is the key to understand this mitzvah of Bikurim. Going down a little bit, Al Kain, we're about 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the top of this section here of the Akedas Yitzchak. Al Kain atatzarich la'asos ma'aseh. Therefore, you need to do an action. In other words, recollection is not enough. Mere history is not enough. You have to do a ma'aseh, a formal action. V'lakachta imcha devarim, and you do a recitation, a formal recitation. That's what the Arami Obed Avi serves as. Hamaskirim tamid ki Lashem ha'aretz m'loa. That these recitations and actions, the bowing down, the swinging of the Bikurim above the head of the Kohen, all of this is meant to cultivate the sense that God is the owner of all things and He's the source of all bounty. U'miyado nitne lecha l'matana, and that from His hand you are given a gift, you are given grace.
And that God is the source and the giver of all at all times of any success that one has. That you take from the first fruits. That specifically the things that you think are yours, that come from your land, that is what you have to give back to Hashem as a gift, as a recollection or a recognition of God's bounty and God's lordship over all the good. That in truth, that the bringing of the bikurim of the first fruits, v'chol minchas reishis hamuvaos, and any agricultural gift that is the first, and that we have many such mitzvos that are associated with the first of the produce, the first of the land, the first of the womb, yoru al adnus shel alakus, that it demonstrates the mastery. The total mastery and domination of God, the ainu lefi hashivui ela aval lefi ha'ora al ha'avoda v'ha'achna, and that it's not a matter of equivalence, but this worship and this recitation and this ritual, all the actions that you are performed demonstrate this subservience. With all the first fruits of you know the wheat and the corn and the grapes, and this is true also for Peter Rechem, for the first animals that come from the womb, and whether it's a man or with actual animals. So in Rabbi Yitzchak Rama we move a little bit from the social dimension, the sense of compassion to those that are weaker than us, to the sense of humility, to the sense of mastery. But all of these ideas are inculcated through this ritual, through this process, where it's not enough to recall a time or recall a moment in history, but it all has to be done in the form of a ritualized behavior. It's not merely recollecting facts, but it's a self-creating, what I'm calling a memory, or what Yerushalmi calls a memory. And we get this very clearly in the Haggadah, which we all are familiar with. B'chol dor b'dor chayv adam liros es asmo ki'ilu hu yatzim Mitzrayim. This sounds like mere rhetoric. This sounds like a kind of an artificial way of seeing yourself in the story, but what the Haggadah is doing, and it's doing this in tandem with these many mitzvot that require bringing the first of, and highlighted in Mikra Bikurim in particular, it is a way of symbolizing through behavior, through ritual, through prostration, through a whole series of actions. It's meant to embody this sense of being a part of the story, and not just a passive recipient of some ancestral tale, but to be an actual partner in this destiny that you're writing right now in front of you. And that's what B'chol Dor B'Dor Chayv Adam Liros Es Asmo Kilu Hayatzam Mitzrayim is meant to do. Shenemar V'Yigadet Levincha B'Yom Ahu Lemor B'Avor Zeh Asa Li B'Tzeisi Mitzrayim. Remember, it's the same phenomena that we documented when we looked at the Mikra Bikurim. Kivasi Ela Aretz Asher Nishba Hashem L'Avaseinu L'Aseislanu. From a historical perspective, that's false. History understood as the rational progression of one event after the next, with the ability to determine the truth, historical truth, that's a falsity. That's a lie. You didn't come from the land of Mitzrayim to the land of Canaan. That happened 2,000 years ago. When you say at the Haggadah that you came, you left Egypt, that's not true from a historical point of view. You didn't leave Egypt. But through the cultivation of memory, through the cultivation of one's own insertion, one's own self-creation in the story, then you are a part of that story. You become part of that story. Then that's a truth that may not be historical in the strict sense, in the way we understand in a scientific sense, in a historical sense that we might discuss history today, but in the religious dimension of memory, which is more significant for us, it is a truth. And it's the most profoundest truth that we could possibly embody. Lo es avaseinu bilvad gal HaKadosh Baruch Hu ela af osonu gal imahem. We were also taken out with our ancestors. Shenemar ba'osanu hotzi misham leman havi osanu laseis lanu es ha'artha shenish ba'al avaseinu. Again, we could all say, yes, it means our family. I met my ancestors. That's not enough. That's the problem of American history. That's why in American history, we don't know our American history, because we see it as just ancestors, we see it as founding fathers, but it's only in our heads. It's not embodied in our behaviors, it's not embodied in our emotional or cognitive orientation. It's just an external fact. It's not an internalized, accepted value or truth. We just have a few minutes left. I want to look inside with you in the Yerushalmi, in Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, the Zechor Jewish History and Jewish Memory. And he makes a few cultural observations, and I think, again, if we use the American history template as our guide, as we began with, we can see how different the Jewish perspective on history is, how dramatically different our stance, our orientation to the past is than a more secularized version of history. Only in Israel and nowhere else is the injunction to remember felt as a religious imperative to an entire people. Zachor, that's not Herodotus and the history of the Peloponnesian War, where you can just chart what happened and you can see the ancestors and you can see history. This is deeper, this is different. And he goes on in beautiful language, its reverberations are everywhere, but they reach a crescendo in Devarim, in Sefer Devarim as a whole, and in the prophets, Zechor Yemos Olam, Bino Shnos Chol Dor V'Dor. Memory flowed, above all, through two channels, ritual and recital. Even while fully preserving their organic links to the natural cycles of the agricultural year, spring and first fruits, the great pilgrimage festivals of Passover and Sukkos were transformed into commemorations of the exodus from Egypt and the sojourn in the wilderness. The point is, it's not just a cold recitation of facts. A very beautiful way of saying it is that the Jewish relationship with time has remained that of memory. Oral transmission always enabled Jewish children to reappropriate their parents' emotions and ideas, not the facts only, and disciples their master's teaching. Memory is the realm of feelings and of life, of participatory collective enterprise in which time is processed through the categories of tradition. So history is processed through memory, through your own recitations of sayings that aren't just external to you, but they become you when you put yourself in the story, when you say, and it's not just a mere gimmick that you say, I came to this land. Basi el aretz. It's that you actually believe it, and you say it every year, it becomes internalized into your very psyche. And with this we'll end. The past is not simply something recorded. It is also, and more importantly, something to be internalized. The person making the profession places himself and his bounty into the story of the people of Israel. The recitation, he's talking about Mikra Bikurim now, gives meaning to the ritual, a meaning derived from the foundational story of the nation, and ideally cultivates a sense of gratitude and obligation in the person making the presentation. That's essentially the Rambam and the Akedas Yitzchak. That it's a matter of gratitude and a sense of God's lordship over all the good that we possess. As we approach Yom HaDin, we recall its other name, Yom HaZikaron. And we look at our communities and we see year after year we daven the same liturgy, the same texts, and it's something beautiful because it's not just rote mechanical repetition or recollection, mere recollection of history, of facts, of external facts. It's something that, at our best, we internalize. We become these protagonists in this amazing drama of Bnei Yisrael and our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we should be zoche to have not just a Yom HaDin, but a true Yom HaZikaron, in the sense not just of history, but even of memory. Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.
You started out by saying, by Amima Hay.
Right.
So by a judge.
Right.
You could say, it's the judge. So no, you have to have it. That's some shofting.
Right.
So
right.
How does this apply here? So I have this. The Kohen is a Mizbech.
Right.
So this guy, my grandmother, I bend this guy.
Right.
This is a guy now that I don't.
Right. Okay, thank you. Hey, all right. Thank you.
I was thinking, as we were talking about bringing ourselves back to, for memory purposes, I recognize the fact we were seeing it.
Right, right. The same thing. Exactly. Same exact thing. That's what we say. That we were all there. Yes, that it wasn't just history. Yeah. That we were all there. Yeah.
Shkoyach. How are you?
How are you doing?